He wore no crowns and won no glory, and now his watch has ended. We salute Wayne, England's White Walker, as he decides not to let his international career drag on. Elsewhere in the Premier League's battle for titles, we get a raven about the last round of action before the qualifiers come. Liverpool saw off the Hoff midweek. Sunday, can they stun the Gunners? Will they be outclassing Arsenal? In Man United, will Mourinho's wild horses continue their form after last year's flat season? Or will the Foxes prove a hurdle too far? And City, Sheikh Mansour makes it my Hirona, but will Bournemouth give it up for Pep's boys in the same way that Everton didn't on Monday? We'll be talking League Cup, Champions League playoffs, Italy, and looking at your questions in this Totally Football Show. And today on the Totally Football Show, it's hello to James Horncastle.
Hello.
It's Adam Hurry of Football Clichés.
Hi.
Hi, Adam. And, oh my word, Mark Schwarzer.
Howdy.
You're looking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, despite your 4 a.m. start to watch the League Cup draw live from China.
No, unfortunately, I missed it. My alarm didn't go off. I did set it, but for some unknown reason, it didn't work.
I'm sorry about that, Mark. We will talk about this later on. Mark Schwarzer, for anyone who's not aware, two World Cup appearances, published author, been at the Bundesliga, Borough legend Fulham, a back-to-back title winner at Chelsea and Leicester.
Hardly, really. I mean, I'm not really a back-to-back title winner. I was there. I watched. Actually, at Chelsea, I was only there for 6 months, the first 6 months of that season, and I moved to Leicester.
Important ones.
I didn't sit on the bench even one Premier League game, so that doesn't count for me. And at Leicester, yes, I did sit on the bench for, 37 out of 38 Premier League games, but didn't make one appearance, so that doesn't count as a title for me either.
All right. Well, what no one can take away from you, Mark, is the fact that you were the first international goalkeeper that Wayne Rooney faced in an international career that ended yesterday, Wednesday, when he said, I'm not doing this anymore.
That's right, and I'm glad you brought that up, because it was a very memorable match, not for the fact that Wayne Rooney made his debut, but that's when Australia beat England, of course, at Upton Park, while the bowling ground.
3-1.
It was.
He didn't retire then.
No. I had a taste of it and I wanted to keep going. And unfortunately, I think it was in 2014, we played England again, this time up at the Stadium of Light, and I'd retired by that stage, and we lost 1-0.
Yeah. Well, draw whatever conclusions you will from that of Wayne Rooney, England's all-time record goal scorer, second in caps behind Shilton.
Yeah, which he could if he'd stayed on and played this season, even as a bit part player coming on for the bench. He would have broken that record. So quite the gesture shows he's not, it's not an egotistical. It would have been egotistical of him to continue, I suppose.
I think for a goal scorer, to pass the goal scoring landmark is a big thing. And I think we can all forgive him for staying on long enough to do that. I think the appearance, I don't think it would mean that much to him.
It would mean a lot to the nation, though. I mean, first Big Ben and now this.
It's kind of like holding all the belts in wrestling, though, isn't it? He'd have appearance record, he'd have the goals record, so, you know.
Do you think he sat on too long?
No, I think it's perfectly timed. Consensus seems to be that he's left at the right time, apparently on his own terms. Southgate apparently offered him a place in the squad for the upcoming games against Malta and whoever. But, it seems about right time for me. I think one World Cup would have been one tournament too far. I think that's fair to say.
Looking forward to the whoever clash, because they can be tricky opponents. Some interesting articles about the Rooney retirement this week. Rory Smith in the New York Times says, I like this actually, he says, the Wayne Rooney left Everton for Man United all those years ago, the teenage prodigy with the soft voice and the cruiserweights build, has every reason to be proud 13 years later of the Wayne Rooney who agreed to make the return journey. That's nice. That's all you can really ask, is to be, you know, proud of your future self. This from Alan Tyres in The Telegraph is even more special. Other countries will produce better footballers, fitter, slicker, sexier, more cultured footballers. Of course they will. They produce fitter, slicker, sexier, more cultured people. But for better or worse, we are English and Wayne is ours. He is Wayne Rooney and so are we.
We are all Wayne Rooney.
We are Wayne Rooney. Anyway, well, he scored his 200th goal, didn't he, in the Premier League on Monday for Everton, and he'll be looking to extend that record on, is it Saturday when Everton play Chelsea?
It's Sunday.
Sunday, on Sunday.
It's the first game on Sunday. Yeah.
Is it? Well, we'll talk more about that later on. And what I mentioned is the last round of games before the international break, and indeed the end of the transfer window. There's much to be discussed. So we'll be getting disgusting right after this. Sunday afternoon, Mark Schwarzer, you're going to be at Anfield, and that's because Liverpool are going to be there and they're going to be playing Arsenal.
They are, and that's and, you know, it's always an interesting game. Last season, I think the last game, Liverpool beat Arsenal at home, so there's a bit of a revenge for Arsene Wenger. Obviously, it's only three games into the season, but Arsenal having already lost a game, the pressure's slowly starting to mount on Arsene Wenger again.
Just for a change, I'm thinking goals here. The last eight meetings have averaged almost 4.4 goals a game. And looking at what Liverpool were doing Wednesday night against Hoffenheim, they certainly look up for a bit of goal scoring.
I think this has 4-3 written all over it. It's like Stan Collymore popping up with a late winner. So Arsene Wenger slumped over the advertising hoardings and one for the ages, definitely.
I think this is a very significant game in Arsenal's recent history, because in March when they went to play Liverpool, that was the game in which Wenger left out Alexis Sanchez. And that situation has still not been resolved. They lost 3-1 that day. Wenger changed his tactics. Yeah, for the first time, really, it wasn't the back three that we later see, but he went direct. They were just launching long balls. And the only players that I think had more than one pass to Giroud was the goalkeeper, who had six, and the defenders. So they went long, which is not Arsenal. And it meant that they just couldn't control the game at all, couldn't control midfield. And Liverpool were worthy winners in that. And you have to say that Liverpool, in games against the top six, tend to really come alive. I think they've only lost one in Klopp's time at the club against the top six at Anfield. That was, strangely enough, against Louis van Gaal's Manchester United, when United went there and won 1-0. I think the only challenge really for Liverpool is they've been able to rotate so far this season, going into their Champions League games against Hoffenheim. This time they probably won't. He'll look to play the same team I think he played yesterday, and go for Arsenal. But given the frailties that Arsenal have at the back, I think people have figured out that back three. We saw Leicester really get at it in the opening night of the season. I think you'd be hard pressed to back against Liverpool in this game.
All right, especially on the basis of Wednesday's performance, although there is always a danger of a bit of a come down, but magnificent performance, really. The Mane back heels, the goals.
Absolutely. You look at this front three, and you know, we've seen this kind of mild resurgence of the centre forward elsewhere. Lukaku going to United, Chelsea signing Morata, but Liverpool don't have this kind of spearhead of a centre forward. They have this kind of interchangeable front three. Roberto Firmino is ostensibly the central figure, but he moves left, he moves right, and Salah, who kind of waits around for some space to open up. And then you've got Mane, who there was one moment during the second half. He had the ball out on the left-hand side from a standing start, beat the fullback, and he left him for dead. And I thought, I've never seen anything like that before. Maybe only sort of Eden Hazard has that kind of pace right off the blocks. And so for a back three like Arsenal's, who are, you know, well, yeah, exactly. So I think they're going to be quite easily outmaneuvered. But right. They're interesting to watch.
I mean, the third goal yesterday, Chan's goal, was a magnificent team move. Just, again, players that, yeah, you'd expect to be sort of front three, but they're picking up all kinds of different positions. Yeah. Really hard for Hoffenheim to deal with. Pulled out of position, and just the runs from Firmino to get to the crossing.
Was that the goal where Klopp punched the air and shouted, "That's football"?
Yes,
it was. It was. Mark Canary.
I actually think that without Coutinho on the side, I mean, Firmino, I think, has stepped up. He's playing arguably his best football at the club. There's more responsibility on his shoulders, and actually, I think they play better football. I think with Coutinho, it's a bit more predictable, because it's always give Coutinho the ball, let him kind of create something.
He'll have a shot from just outside the penalty
That's
box.
That's right, yeah. And only score six or seven a season.
Yeah.
But I think when you look at Mane, Salah, I mean, Salah's brought another dimension to them. He's a different boy now from when he was at Chelsea to now. You can see he's matured. You can see he's a lot more confident. And they've just got pace to burn, which Arsenal are going to really struggle with.
Mark Canary asking, after seeing Mane last night, do you think Barcelona are trying to buy the wrong Liverpool player? I mean, they certainly didn't miss Coutinho. Is that all sorted now? Some word that he's going to release some kind of vaguely passive-aggressive statement about how he's disappointed in Liverpool's approach in the transfer window. Is he going to be back available for Klopp?
I mean, he was supposed to be back available last night. But I think, if anything, this start of the season has shown that he's kind of expendable, that they can win without him.
Right.
Considering that, I find it baffling, as Michael Cox did last week, that they're saying we wouldn't even sell him for 150 million. I don't think he necessarily improves that team. I thought Chan last night was fantastic. Chan was really good.
Yeah, he was in a more advanced role, though.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so now you're back in Liverpool big time on this. Adam, similar?
They're going to edge it, you know, the odd goal in 15, probably.
Right. Mark, you're predicting Arsene Wenger in crisis within days.
I think so, yeah. I think Liverpool will be too strong for him again. I mean, both sides are suspect defensively. Arsenal, I think, just a little bit more. And I think up front, you know, Lacazette doesn't bring enough at the moment, doesn't do enough. Mm. He's not a Sanchez. It'd be interesting to see whether Sanchez comes into the side.
As a goalkeeper, if you would, you'd be more worried about a Sanchez hoving interview than a Lacazette, would you?
Probably, yeah, I think I would. I mean, Lacazette, you know, kind of in and around the box, he obviously is at his most dangerous. I think with Sanchez anywhere in the pit, it's kind of reminiscent a little bit of when Henri was at the club. Mm. Giving the ball, let him run at you is actually the worst situation to be at. And then sometimes when he's actually going away with you, with his back to you, is also equally dangerous because you kind of almost take the foot off the throttle a little bit, thinking, all right, we've got him. And then within a split second, he turns and he's gone. And I remember many a times playing against Henri and being in that situation and just leaving us for dead. I mean, we've had some horrendous results against Arsenal when I was at Middlesbrough, 5-1, 6-1. And these were at home. And that was a famous Kanu backheel at one stage as well. And when we scored, actually most of the Middlesbrough fans had left, and then it was the Arsenal fans who actually who cheered when we scored at home.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, that was cheering. Nice. Was he the scariest player you ever encountered?
Henri?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was. Arguably, because of from any part of the pitch, whenever he got the ball, and you probably wanted him at the edge of the 8-yard box with his back to goal. You didn't want him to have too much space because when he had the space, he just had that turn of speed and those long legs and the ability to keep possession. I mean, that Arsenal side at that time, the Invincibles, and in and around that time were arguably the best team that I think I've ever played against.
Mm. Fair enough. Chelsea are taking on Everton, Mark, this Sunday. Mm. Chelsea owned Everton last season, 5-0 and 3-0, the two results. But it's a different Everton side this time around. Adam, one that you're suggesting a genuine top six contenders. Is that because of what happened against Man City
on
Monday?
Yeah, top six contenders, but more that they're going to make their presence felt in the top six, not just sort of hover around the edges of it. They're going to add another layer to this showdown fixtures that we have almost every week. Mm. So, yeah, they did give a good account of themselves at City, but for Chelsea, this is the kind of this crisis, no crisis roller coaster. If they hadn't have beaten Spurs last week, this fixture would have been pretty horrible for them to have to tackle this time around. So, but they did. They wiped the floor with Everton last season. I think the one at Stamford Bridge is probably their best performance under Conte in an attacking sense. The fact that it's not at Goodison is probably good news for Chelsea because it's a horrible place to go and play. So I suspect Chelsea will edge this one. But I don't. The problem with Chelsea is that this season they will only ever be 90 minutes away from a crisis.
Right, okay, because Burnley gave them a real problem in week one and indeed took away the win. Is Rooney going to add to his collection of 200 goals?
He hasn't got a remarkable record against Chelsea. Oddly, it's quite similar to Lionel Messi, who scores against everybody else, but it was always sort of struggled against Chelsea. It's
one of the many similarities.
Yeah, it's one of those anomalies of football.
There are no pictures of him scoring against Man City one year and then again another year, and it's the same fans swearing at him, as what happened after this Everton game.
And nice that he actually tweeted back to them. Nice to see a few familiar faces.
No.
Was remarkable that. Well, Chelsea looked really impressive against Spurs last weekend with their new setup. Is Conte going to use that again, do you think, here, or was it just for that particular circumstance?
I think it'll be just for that game. Mm-hmm. I think you'll revert back David Luiz to centre-half. I think at home they'll feel like they'll need some more in midfield to try and attack Everton more. So, I mean, at Wembley against Spurs, you know, they're up against it. They needed to play a bit more cautious. They needed to get a result. That's what Conte wanted. The game couldn't have gone any better for them. Tottenham, for all as well as they played on the day, the chances they had, hitting the post from Kane, the number of possession they had, Chelsea rode their luck. They did exactly the same thing as they did to them in the League Cup. In the FA Cup semi final when they beat them. You know, Tottenham had all the chances. Mm. Everton and Chelsea were ruthless. And then this time, you know, it was an unlikely source in Marcus Alonso who would come up and score two goals. I mean, his free kick was awesome.
Mm.
And he's run down the left hand side, and you know, it was a hard hard finish, difficult for a goalkeeper, but I think But I think Lloris just went the wrong way. You know, I think he, as in, he attempted to save it the wrong way. I think he just needed to throw a leg down or stick a hand down rather than trying to get his whole body behind the
ball. Let's talk about Hugo Lloris, because I'm confused. Some people this week saying he's really overrated. Squawker pointing out he's made six defensive errors. I've no way of checking these facts, but six defensive errors in the Premier League since the start of last season. Only Lucas Fabianski has more, with seven.
But if you watch Tottenham and the way that they play, he's going to make more mistakes. They always play out at the back, no matter what. No matter who they're playing against, teams are pushed right up high against them. They continuously look to play out at the back. And Lloris is at the heart of that. So he's the one that will make the mistake ultimately.
In terms of distribution?
In distribution. Right. And also, he plays a high line. He comes off his line. I really like the way he's playing. I've actually learn to like him even more. From before, I used to think, yeah, I actually would have to agree with Squawker and think, actually, I didn't think he was as highly rated as everyone was going on about. Having watched him now for the last over the last 12 months regularly, I've got a lot of admiration for him, and I think he's a very, very good goalkeeper. There's no doubt about it, and particularly when a goalkeeper's more involved like he is, he's going to make more mistakes. But, you know, he's a big reason also that they're so strong defensively.
All right, we had David Preece on last Thursday, very much goalkeeper day, on the Totally Football show. And he was saying, I think he said De Gea was his favourite goalkeeper. Who do you think is the best goalkeeper in the Premier League?
Who's my favourite goalkeeper in the Premier League? Oh, gosh. I mean, Hugo Lloris, probably, and Thibaut Courtois, I think.
Really?
The two of them. I mean, De Gea, you know, I have this argument, and Man United fans, I think, dislike me profusely for it, because I never say that De Gea is the best goalkeeper in the world, because I analyse it in a number of ways, and I look at De Gea and I go, you know what, on his line, he's arguably the best goalkeeper in the world. But what else does he do? He doesn't distribute a lot. He doesn't come off his line. He doesn't take crosses very often, and he doesn't play high up outside his box. He doesn't sweep a lot. I mean, watching him play, and again, I watched Man United play last season a lot, he's often between his six-yard box and his penalty spot when the ball's up the other end. He's a typical Spanish goalkeeper that likes to stay very deep. So for me, he needs to bring more to his game. He needs to command his box more, and he needs to play a higher line and control that area between his defence and his area in the goal.
All right, so Lloris or Courtois for you are the best?
Definitely.
And who would be the worst in the Premier League?
Oh, my.
Just say there's a couple there. I'm not.
Well, no, everyone's going to think, I bet he doesn't answer that.
No, well, it's a tough one.
Don't let us down, Mark.
No, it's a tough one. You know,
who could improve? Who could really improve? Who would you look at and think, come on, you can do better than that?
I think there's a number of goalkeepers that can improve. I think we can all improve. I used to think the same thing up until the day I retired. You can improve. Who would I say is the worst goalkeeper in the world? Well, probably you caught me on the spot now. I can't even think of anyone.
Well, it's been a problem position at Man City, hasn't it?
Well, that's true. Yeah. What do you think of Edison?
I'm not convinced. I watched him in the first game. I mean, I've only watched him one game, so it's hard to make that judgment on him at the moment. But I watched him at Brighton, and he had very little to do. But what he did do, he didn't do very convincingly.
Right.
Came out for a couple of crosses, collided with his own player, tried to he caught a few, but he just looked unconvincing. And then his kicking wasn't great either for a goalkeeper. And then if you watch him run, have you watched him yet?
Oh, well,
you seen his movement?
No.
He doesn't look like an athlete.
Oh.
Yeah, I was bewildered, actually, when I saw him, and you see him, he almost shuffles. He doesn't actually really run, so you've got to watch him more
closely. Is that important, just for...
No, not necessarily, but, you know, it's just the impression, isn't it?
Right.
I mean, it's that body language and impression. You watch him and you go, does he look like an athlete? And they've paid, what, 30-odd million for him?
Yeah. He wouldn't be the first goalkeeper who didn't look like an athlete.
Well, yeah, no, but in today's modern game, I mean, you'd expect him more to look like an athlete. Name names, come on. Name names. Who didn't look like an athlete?
Neville Southall.
That's an easy target.
That's not fair, is it?
No.
A big target.
No, I'm a big believer in body language. But equally, if you're talking about not running like a footballer, I'd add, I mean, David Platt, principally.
Uh-huh.
But also Raheem Sterling doesn't run like a footballer.
No, but he doesn't. He runs like an athlete, doesn't he? He looks like a sprinter. The way his body's shaped.
So.
Yeah, when he's shaped, when you look at him running a straight line, he's incredible. He's quick.
Yeah.
He's powerful.
Okay.
He looks like a sprinter. Whereas Edison, I'm not sure what he
looks
like.
I'm going to watch that next time.
Yeah, you should. You really should.
Well, it's great to have you on, Mark. Edison's going to be doing his shuffle at Bournemouth this Saturday. 15-1, which, as you were pointing out, Adams, was a game show.
Yeah, probably the greatest game show.
Do you think?
Considered. Yeah, it's,
and why did you like 15-1 so
much? It was challenging enough, but didn't make you feel utterly, you know, inadequate. And you know, you felt a sense of achievement. And maybe I only had sort of these sort of weekday lunchtimes to myself more than other people. But
I can't remember that you
started
with
William G. Stewart, wasn't it?
William G. Stewart.
Yeah.
Do you know? I think that I went to a pilot of that as a contestant.
Right.
Yeah, that's bizarre, isn't it?
How did you get on?
Well, I never made the show. I don't know if I ever. I think
you
it's one of those
qualify
ones
where, for 15-1.
I think the thing is that they had a pool of people, which they got an extra large pool of people in case they needed them, and they just plain didn't need them.
It's not the first pilot you've made which never made it.
That's so very true. So very true. But sorry, the reason I mentioned 15-1, City have scored 15-1 of Bournemouth in the last four meetings. Wow, four meetings between these two. Is it going to be straightforward like that again? Bournemouth certainly are off to a horrible start this season.
It seems that City like to play away from the Etihad. They had the second best record on the road last season, and contrast that with the seventh best home record. And I think we saw some familiar problems against Everton. Again, I mentioned Edison, not really because of culpability on the goal, even though the ball went through his legs, but more because that was the first shot that was actually on target, and they conceded, and they kept doing that last season, and they keep doing it now. But yeah, I think it's really interesting what Guardiola is trying to achieve there, because they're playing this kind of back three. I think they're playing it not necessarily because it gives them more kind of solidity, but it allows him to play Aguero and Gabriel Jesus. And for whatever reason, I don't think he trusts Aguero to play up on his own. I think this is having a knock-on effect around the rest of the team, because Sane, who's really came into his own final few months of last season, is kind of having to play out sort of out position really in a really kind of difficult role as a left wing back. He was the goal kind of came from in that area. You had Kompany step out, overcommit, which he occasionally does, and Otamendi just had a bit of a nightmare generally against Calvert-Lewin. So I wonder if he might just go away from this and actually bite the bullet and say, sorry, Sergio, we're going to sit you on the bench and, you know, go with one up top or something like
right.
that.
Well, as for Eddie Howe, who was admitting after their defeat at home to Watford last weekend that he didn't know how to sort out their problems, what would he draw from Everton's 1-1 draw against Man City? Is there anything there that he can hope for from Jermaine Defoe? Nothing.
No, absolutely not. I mean, Bournemouth, yeah, like you said, it's been a terrible, terrible start for them. I think it's more just the way they've played. You know, they haven't played well. They've invested heavily. They've been linked with Damari Gray, so they look like they're going back in for him again. They've already spent on Ake, you know, 20-plus million, Begovic in goals. You could argue and say, you know, with Ake, yes, they've tried to strengthen the back line.
Did well for them last time he was
there. He did. No, I think he did really well for them. And I think he's a good player, and I think he's a good buy. 24 million or 22 million, I'm not sure. But in today's market, probably, and he's only young. But I think they definitely need to strengthen more defensively. I mean, Bournemouth's an interesting one because they always try and play football out of the back. Coming up against Manchester City, if they try and play football like they do out of the back, I think it's going to go horribly wrong for them.
This is the thing about Eddie Howe is, you know, two or three seasons into the Premier League, he's had this kind of breath of fresh air reputation. Yes, your team play good football. But now they've semi-established themselves in the Premier League. Now we're asking, well, what have you got now? Where did your career go from here? Because, you know, this career trajectory of his will only lead so far. And so Bournemouth...
Is there a glass ceiling at Bournemouth?
Well, yeah, certainly at Bournemouth, but...
Well, he's got a bit of money now as well. So
yeah,
he's spent some money.
But
so it's interesting. Yeah, but it's interesting for a manager who in the past hasn't had a lot of money.
Absolutely.
Now all of a sudden how is he going to invest it? How, you know, is he going to be successful when he does it?
Yeah, some managers just aren't suited to spending lots of money.
Not used to it.
Yeah.
I think that's more the case.
And this is why he's not playing the guy he signed for free, Jermaine Defoe, who's, you know, who hasn't started a game yet, well, at least in the league, you know, because apparently he's not fit, in their opinion. And Defoe says he is fit. Obviously, he's frustrated because he wants to be playing, expected to be playing, wants to go to the World Cup, doesn't see his England career as being over, unlike Wayne Rooney. And, yeah, it's not really happening, and they need goals.
All right, that's City Bournemouth. Time for a quick break.
Tweet us at The Totally Show and find us on Facebook and at thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Dear Totally Football Show, seriously disappointed to discover from your photo what a podcast looks like behind the scenes. I pictured you sitting around an expensive table loaded with banks of monitors showing live heat maps and optostats from around Europe. This is from Nick Marshall, subject Shattered Illusions. Mark, what do you think of our Bijou tablette?
I think it's great.
Yeah.
I think it's a great little venue. I was impressed when I walked in the door. As you mentioned earlier on, it's a little bit noisy out in the restaurant cafe area.
Yeah.
However, it's a very cool place, and the studio, I think, is very, very cool.
Oh, that's nice.
We could actually charge tickets for people to come and watch the pod.
Like the Tunnel Club.
Like the Tunnel Club.
Yes. Yeah. That'd be great. Yeah.
Right, it's because there's a window. Unfortunately for anyone watching, it's not a two-way mirror.
Mm.
But, there is a window. You could come. But we're not going to be here next time. We're at Spirit Land at the moment.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, well. Anyway, this is fascinating, isn't it, listeners? Yeah. Let's move on to Spurs Burnley, which is also on Sunday. Everything's happening this Sunday. We've talked about Hugo Lloris. We haven't talked about Wembley Hoodoo yet. If they lose this game, there can't be any further questions about whether there is a massive jinx all over Wembley in Spurs.
I just can't see them losing this game. I mean, you look at the way they
play. Do you remember what happened last time Burnley came to London?
Yeah, no, but when they're playing them now at Wembley, they've played so well recently, and they played very well against Chelsea. They just didn't hit the back. I mean, they didn't score, did they? I mean, Chelsea scored three goals and won 2-1. But they were, again, just very unlucky. There's definitely that little bit of a hoodoo for them. I think it's a psychological thing. I mean, Mauricio Pochettino has come out and said that as well. It's not about the stadium. It's nothing else. It's the players. It's in their head. And I think it is a case of that. The positives out of it, I was at that game, is that Tottenham, how they lost that game, they don't know. They've gone in scratching their heads. They can't understand it.
Isn't that a negative? Because it just further fuels this notion in their heads that...
Possibly. But I think, you know, coming up against a so-called lesser opposition, I think they'll win the game.
All right, but if they don't, that's what I'm saying.
Well, if they don't, yeah, then...
It's still August as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, yeah, Harry Kane hasn't scored in August. That's one of their problems. Who have they got to try and help him? They haven't really, other than, you know, what's his name?
Janssen.
Yeah.
I think go with they haven't. You obviously got Dele Alli's got goals. Eriksen's got a certain number of goals.
Yeah, they do. Son didn't start against Chelsea. Whether they bring him in, I thought he actually added something when he came on.
Right.
Pace, trickery.
Right. I'm just saying this is a must-win game for Spurs. This and it's crisis.
The match winner last time around when they played at the Lane was a certain Danny Rose.
I think he's
now due to have crunch time contract talks with Spurs amid interest from Chelsea and Manchester United. But I think you could really tell at the weekend when they played against Chelsea that they miss Walker and Rose, that tandem, particularly when teams like Chelsea really congest the middle. And on that big pitch at Wembley where it is wider than White Hart Lane, you can get some width and maybe penetrate through those from there rather than have to go through the middle all the time. So I think they're a bit of a miss at the moment.
A word about Burnley's front line. We talked earlier about Liverpool's sort of unorthodox front three where there's no obvious centre forward. Burnley have all the centre forwards in the country, all in one squad. They've got Johnny Walters, Ashley Barnes, Sam Vokes, and then they've gone and signed Chris Wood. So is that the most bustling front line in football history? I can't think
How
of
many would you play at once, Adam?
All of them. Just go 4-2-4.
Of centre forwards.
And just isolate every single one of Spurs defenders and just pump it up there. That would be a sight.
They all are really Burnley players, aren't they? The way that Burnley play, that kind of, you know, Sean Dyche knows what he wants in a play. He wants an honest player, hard-working player, and he's got that. I mean, the only thing I'd say is Chris Wood brings a little bit extra. He's got that extra little bit of quality. When I was with him at Leicester for 6 months, he was carrying a lot of weight. He was coming back from injury. He was struggling
to
lose it.
For a man called Wood.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah. I'd say more so lumber. Yeah. It wasn't timber, and it was still lumber. He's got himself in a shape, and he's scoring goals. Technically, he's very, very good at finishing.
44 goals in 88, one every two in the Championship. And, of course, New Zealand international, so pretty much from where you're from.
Well, I try not to hold that against him. I mean, it's close, but it's not where I'm from.
It's not the same.
No. Come on, let's be honest. That's like, I mean, that's just like saying you're the same as the Welsh.
Yeah, well, we kind of are.
Well, yeah, I know, but You're not really, are you?
But I mean, I'm European. Do you not consider yourself like Antipodean, a broadly brotherhood of New Zealand and any other islands that you might have down there that I'm not familiar with?
No.
Interesting. Can he step up?
Yeah, I think he can.
All right.
I think he can. You know, it's his second chance. He said it. He's been very open about the fact that it's another opportunity for him, and one that he's always aimed to get back in the Premier League, and this is his massive chance.
Right. And it's a big chance for Burnley. Looking forward to that game.
Also, Spurs have signed a player for €44 million.
He's a good defender. He's got pace. He's got strength. He reads the game really well. And I was surprised that some clubs hadn't come in for him.
Right, but can he win at Wembley? That's the question. All right, your last team, Mark, Leicester.
Yep.
Leicester. Can they stop Mourinho's Wild Horses TM? The story so far... 2-4-0 wins, although they were against West Ham and a very weakened Swansea. But it was 4-1 when they played Leicester last season, so we're expecting another big win.
I do, and you know, you refer to the first two games against West Ham and against Swansea. Last season, they didn't win those games 4-0.
Mm.
You know, they struggled. Mm. They lost. They dropped too many points. They didn't score enough goals at home and away. You know, and Lukaku's a massive buy for them. When Lukaku was, there was talk of him going back to Chelsea, and it looked like odds on he was going there. I actually thought it was the wrong move for him because of the way that Chelsea play. He tried that once before. He hasn't changed his game.
What's wrong with the way Chelsea play? That
well, they need a striker. I mean, you see Morata on the weekend. I thought Morata was poor. I thought he struggled because they needed someone to hold the ball up. Morata couldn't do it. Right. Lukaku's not known for holding the ball up. He doesn't want to hold the ball. He doesn't want to play up his backside. What he wants to do, he wants players off people's shoulders. He wants to get players in support, making those darting runs in behind the defence because he wants to utilise his strengths. And at United, he can do that. Whereas at Chelsea, they'll have to change the way they play. And they won't do that. I can't see it. And I think Morata's going to have a tough time because of that, because Chelsea won't change. Whereas Lukaku, add Matic to the mix, who's massive for them, takes a bit of pressure off Pogba. I think Man United and Jose Mourinho, of course, has that mix really well.
All right, and Mkhitaryan as well, who's really making this season his own.
The spotlight's been taken off Pogba and Mkhitaryan because of the arrivals of Lukaku and Matic. So I think those guys can settle in more now. I mean, Pogba... Who's talked about Pogba, really? I mean, I think Anthony Martial brought him up the other day in the press saying within the next 4 years he's going to win, you know, World Player of the Year. But other than that, no one's really talking about Pogba because he's just quietly been able to go about his job, whereas now all the focus is on Matic and Lukaku and they're delivering.
You're suggesting you think it's going to be another big Man United win this?
Yeah, I do. I think they will. I mean, I think it's going to be closer in the sense I think there's going to be a lot of goals. I think Leicester are going to score.
Right.
But I think Man United will outscore them. And Man United have a better defence. Leicester at the moment are still, they just haven't got that right yet. They haven't got the mix right like they did in the year that they won the league.
Right. Luis Voce, or Vos possibly, says, is Harry Maguire going to be the saviour of English football?
Yes,
Adam.
Huge fan of the huge Harry Maguire.
Well, he's another one. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. He's another one that you look at and go, he doesn't look like a footballer.
No, absolutely. the biggest head I've ever seen on a footballer. I mean, obviously, it fits his
there
sizable
are some
body,
big heads around
but
as well.
Yeah. But I mean, obviously, your first thought when you look at him is, big lump, probably can defend, throw his body in the way. But we're talking about he's a very kind of adventurous footballer.
Wow, he's quite an elegant footballer as well.
Yeah.
I mean, some of his touches, again, you talk about. Yeah, your first impression on looking at him, and you think, as a player, yeah.
But you were talking about Mane getting free up the wing against Hoffenheim, and you've not seen things like that. Maguire does that too, no?
Yeah, he gets around everywhere. He's almost like he's got a free role. He just doesn't look like a player who would be granted that kind of position. But he's simply because he's so big, he looks like a kind of, I don't know, he's like he's stomping over someone's Sabutio game. And he's sort of striding forward. But he loves a shot. He loves it. And he's in line for an England call-up just because he's a spectacle. And, young English centre-halves.
They should call people up on the basis of the kind of entertainment factor.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Who will he be up against in terms of Man United's lineup? Who will be patrolling that flank?
Leicester United is a... All over the pitch is a good example of where this is a step up in a test for United, because obviously this is a stronger defence. Swansea and West Ham were kind of papier-mâché defences that they had to come up against. But it's a more dynamic midfield. So, I mean, against Swansea in the first half, United were pretty pedestrian, I thought. They didn't move particularly quickly, they didn't have to. So they're up against a much more energetic midfield. And then you've got you know, sort of Vardy and Okazaki, giving them a real test at the back, making them run around. So all round, it's not going to be anywhere near a procession, I don't think, as it was in their last two games.
Right.
I do still think they'll win.
Okay. Are you still in contact with your old Leicester chums, Mark?
Well, a couple of them. Not all the time, but, you know, I do have direct contact with a few of the boys.
Because you lived through, I mean, whether or not you were sat on the bench or made it onto the field, you lived through one of the most amazing sports stories ever.
Yeah, no, it was amazing, you know, for just to be part of that whole experience, to have an inside view of it all was amazing. What they accomplished, you know, they'll produce a movie out of it.
Supposedly,
yeah. I mean, you know,
are you going to be in it at all?
No, I don't think so. I mean,
were you at Vardy's party?
I may be one of those people in the background. They go, "Who is that?" And I'm like, "Well, actually, yeah, order of elimination. They're not mentioning him or him. It has to be, must be the reserve goalkeeper." You know, what they did, and against all the odds and against all the expectation, against a side, you know, from a team when I first went there in the January the season before, where we're written off, relegated, to turning it around and going on a win of, I think, 8 out of 10 games to the end of the season and finishing comfortably in the Premier League, to following it on. In 18 months, they'd only lost 4 games in the Premier League.
You do seem like a lucky charm, Mark.
Well, I did say, and people did mention it, that if anyone wanted to win the league, they should have signed me after I left Leicester. Even just signed me just to have me on their books, full stop.
In all seriousness, Mark, why did Leicester win that title?
I think time and time again, people underestimated them. I think everybody kept saying that the pressure is going to get too much for them and they're going to fall by the wayside. And didn't matter what result that we just sort of accomplished, people kept putting it down and saying, well, yeah, that was a good performance, a good result, but they're not. Once it comes towards the season, the time of the year where the pressure mounts, and will they stay and will they become, when people start to genuinely see them as title contenders, they'll crumble. And there was not one single game throughout the course of the season where I thought, right, the boys are feeling the pressure. We lost away at Arsenal, virtually the last kick of the game, where Welbeck nodded in a header. And everyone thought this is the game where Leicester's going to fall away. And they didn't. They were clearly disappointed, but they got in after the game. And a lot of the boys just went, hey, it's one loss. Who cares?
But Ranieri was kind of the front of that, wasn't he? Because he did a better job than I've ever seen of kind of playing down their title chances. He was kind of the public face of playing down their title chances.
He did that very, very well. And the other thing he did really well, and it sounds really simple, is he kept it simple. Mm. He kept everything the same pretty much. I mean, he added little tweaks to the way we trained and little bit of tactical changes, but very minor. So he kept everything the same as the season before. The most notable change was Kante. You know, he was phenomenal. He is a phenomenal player. He made a massive difference. He brought the best out of Drinkwater, allowed Mahrez and Vardy to really take the limelight. And it's no surprise to me that Chelsea are interested in Drinkwater because of that. I mean, he's English, but he's also, he knows Kante, and they play really well together. He has that creativity. Back to your question is that we also went to Manchester City. And that was the game where everyone actually thought within that change room, right, we can win this league now, when we went to the City Ground and won 3-1 and actually played them off the park.
Mm. It's just the stupidest thing that ever happened.
It is, and it's phenomenal for the game. I think worldwide, I mean, it received worldwide attention, and people talk about it time and time again now. And, you know, you talk about different teams around the world, and often Leicester gets brought up in conversation for the simple reason that Leicester did it in the Premier League. Why can't we do it?
Yeah,
I miss Claudio Ranieri now.
Yeah,
and I particularly miss, shortly after his sacking, Jose Mourinho appearing in this press conference with CR, his initials in solidarity on his tracksuit top.
Oh, was there one moment that you'd cite as the most special of that entire season?
Well, for me, it's also very different, because when you don't play, you have a different view on things, and I particularly never felt really part of it until you play a game. And I never played one single Premier League game that season. But I think for the players, it was probably, you know, the minute, the realization once you won it. I think that night, that Monday night, when a lot of the boys got together and watched the Chelsea-Tottenham game, the lead up to that game, which I don't entirely agree with how managers came out and, you know, West Brom Pulis came out and said, I'd like Leicester to win before they played against Spurs. And the same with Hazard. He came out and said about he'd rather Leicester won than Tottenham. Not the right thing to do, but it was nice to hear from a Leicester perspective that these guys were in favour of us winning the league. And I think that was the night where, that was the realisation, the final realisation. I mean, everyone thought and everything, but nobody ever talked about it.
Right.
They just thought, right, we just got to keep going, one game at a time. And the manager did that really, really well. His undoing the next season was he tried to tinker.
It's always a mistake to take a winning formula and mess with it. Now, thanks, Mark, for that. We'll have a little bit of a break and then return to the current Premier League season.
Men and ladies of the Totally Football Show, why waste time going to the shop to buy overpriced quadruple-bladed vibrating turbo razors and making the likes of Thierry Henry and Roger Federer even richer by doing so? Instead, head to cornerstone.co.uk/totally and pick up a personally engraved razor and six super sharp blades delivered right to your door for just £4. There are no gimmicks with Cornerstone, just a closer, smoother shave than ever before. And it doesn't just work on your face either. I used it on Jimbo's head before we started recording. Head to cornerstone.co.uk/totally to see for yourself. And if you don't love your first Cornerstone shave, they'll give you your money back, no questions asked.
Whew. If you've got anything to say about these games, get it in quickly. So I'm just going to fly by, Adam. I'm going to hurry.
My great-grandparents were Rush as well.
Were they?
Yeah.
Your great-grandparents were called Rush.
Yeah.
And your name is Hurry.
Correct.
And then, and what were your grandchildren are going to be what? Shuffle?
Haste.
Not even, yeah. Probably mild.
Get a move on.
Yeah. Producer Ben's just chipped in, as is his wont, with the news that his grandparents were called respectively Fox and Wolf. How about that?
Wow.
Huddersfield taking on Saints. Saints have just signed Lazio's Wesley Hoot for £15 million. Is he any good, James?
I think he's a bit wooden. He wanted more game time at Lazio. I mean, he's got potential. He's still very young, but he could never really establish himself in the first team. It was only when someone like Stefan De Vrij was out injured that he could come in and basically play for them.
Right. Huddersfield, of course, have had a brilliant start to the season, and Aaron Moy's been a big part of that. Mark, I know you're exhausted after that lengthy Leicester chat we just had, but one of the best Australian players the Premier League's ever seen?
No. No, but definitely, potentially, at not this stage. I mean, he's played two games.
Yeah.
We can't talk about him being the best player. I mean, you look at the likes of Harry Kewell, Tim Cahill, Marvin Duca, Brett Edmonton, Lucas. I mean, they can ravel on. Let's not forget Stan Lazaridis.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it's not. So he's a very talented young
Winston
man.
Winston Reid. Is he really, really,
yeah, anyway.
So, all right, well, the Huddersfield, fantastic start to the season. Of course, we've seen this before from newly promoted sides, but certainly have momentum behind them at John Smith's Stadium. Newcastle, not so much momentum there as they take on West Ham in the sack race derby.
Wagner, incidentally, doesn't believe in momentum.
Does he not?
No.
What, is a kind of Newtonian concept or what?
He said, for example, they didn't have momentum going into the playoffs last year. And they still got there because...
All right.
Yeah. I think they only won like three of their last 10 games.
Oh, he's an interesting man, isn't he? Isn't he? Anyway, sack race derby at St James's.
Here's a stat for you. Newcastle have lost their opening three games in all competitions for the first time since the 1999-2000 campaign.
All right.
Rude Hullet. And, well, I think we'll remember some of that sort of dismal evening against Sunderland at home. Mm. And he stood in the dugout with a very, very, very angry Shearer behind him. I don't think it's reached those levels of sort of ineptitude just yet. But
well, I don't think he's going to put Shearer on the bench, is he?
No. I don't think he's got anyone decent to drop, actually. But this is kind of like the classico of eternal disillusionment, isn't it? West Ham, Newcastle. I would put Newcastle have just edged ahead in the crisis states because West Ham avoided that potential banana skin in the Carabao Cup.
But they're contrasting managers, though, aren't they? I mean, you look at, Benitez claims he hasn't had the money or enough money to buy the players he wants to, whereas Bilic has, and he's brought in all the players he's wanted to bring in. So,
and it's made no difference.
You could argue and say it's probably been worse.
Ooh. Newcastle haven't scored yet, but they are going to be up against Joe Hart this time, Mark.
You're a harsh man. I'm just saying, harsh man.
Can we investigate this kind of having trouble saving down to his left phenomenon? We did talk
about this with David Priest, but it'd be interesting to get Mark's perspective on this.
The goal that he conceded last weekend, the first one against Manchester. And I was very surprised at how easily it went in on his left. Here, you're right. For me, it was from a technical perspective, as just about as he was hitting the shot, he took a slight step to his right and was moving as he hit the ball. And then therefore, by the time he reacts, the ball's passed him in the back of the net almost.
Is that because lots of keepers do that sort of little hop?
Yeah.
Is it
something
they're trained to do? Is it just pure habit?
It becomes
I do it at the five aside.
Some goalkeeping coaches actually train it and encourage it. Mm. Others don't. I don't agree with it. I think there is a movement that you have, but as the shot's been taken, you need to set.
Right.
You need to be feet on the ground. Because you can imagine, if you take a jump as he hits it, that means you're airborne as the ball's been hit. So it takes that time between when you land again, then you recoil and push off, and often the ball's past you before you can even react.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't make sense. It doesn't actually work.
Interesting. Interesting. Palace taking on Swansea. This is on Saturday afternoon. Neither team has managed a goal so far. Sam Clucas is on the way to Swansea from Hull, James. Palace are taking on Swansea on Saturday. Neither team has scored so far. Sam Clucas has joined Swansea out of Hull.
Yeah, everyone's abandoning ship at Hull. It's not good.
All right, Swansea won both of these last season.
Robertson, Maguire, Clucas. You're reminded of kind of what a serviceable team Hull had there.
Yeah, all
good players.
Yeah.
Of course, they were doing a Huddersfield this time last season, weren't they? As Philippe was mentioning, only on Monday.
With 14 players.
With 14 players. Crazy. That's a game of two teams that already have got lots of work to do. West Brom, meanwhile, the Tony Pulis derby against Stoke on Sunday. Classic Pulis season so far. 2-1-0 wins. They're taking on Stoke, and of course they beat Stoke 1-0 last.
Well, Stoke are Stoke, aren't they? They're Stoke under Mark Hughes.
Mm.
They're woeful 1 week, and then they go and beat Arsenal. And then the next three or four games, they're woeful. You would have thought with selling Arnautovic, they'd maybe get a bit more consistency, but it doesn't seem to. With Darren Fletcher in midfield, with Joe Allen, I think it's a really good combination.
Yeah.
They still need more consistency.
Yeah. Both sides have averaged 31% possession in their two games so far. In fact, Stoke against Arsenal had, what was it, less than 23%? Is the ball just going to sit in the centre circle?
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? You saw Fletcher, for example, abandon Tony Pulis and go to Stoke this summer. Fletcher, one of the kind of most unheralded unsung heroes of, won the Champions League, won the Premier League five times, replaced by Gareth Barry, who was excellent at the weekend. I think I saw one stat, he made more clearances in that game in half an hour than any Premier League player has done so far this season.
I thought you were going to say his whole career, Gareth Barry.
Yeah.
I mean, when was the last time? Okay, his time at Villa, we would have had to make a lot of clearances, but at City, he wouldn't have.
Yeah, but it's not far away from Ryan Giggs' appearance, Premier League appearance.
Wow, okay. So. Of course, Hesse's looking to make things a little bit more exciting for Stoke. Jay Rodriguez moving back into the picture for West Brom, who can be a tremendously exciting player. You've got two in the bag. His 3-1 win over Accrington in that League Cup, rather. And also this weekend, you got Watford taking on Brighton. The Hornets in the League Cup got knocked out by Bristol City, but, Mark, you're making that. It doesn't matter.
No, I don't think so for Watford. I think the way they've started the season has been very positive. And Brighton, I fear for them.
Right. Jack Tanner wants to know what impact you think Matty Ryan will have in the Premier League.
It's a massive learning curve for him. I was at the first game against Manchester City and he made one really good save early in the first half, and then the second goal he conceded, I even spoke to him after the game. He just went, I wasn't expecting it. And I said, as a goalkeeper, expect the unexpected.
Yeah, well, that's top advice.
Yeah, you've always got
just
to
just basically watch out for everything.
Yeah, I mean, listen, in that situation where your defender's under pressure, you've got to expect that it can go wrong.
Right.
It can be pushed. Something can happen.
So there's no time off in the Premier League. Moments in the Championship where you might have thought, okay, I can just take a breather because we've got the ball back. It can turn.
Very much turn. And Matty Ryan has got a big learning curve for himself to adjust to, because previously he's played in Belgium and done very well, went to Valencia, struggled at times, and that was also because of the club's turmoil. And the Premier League is, as we all know, the quickest, the most physical. He's not the tallest, and it's going to be a real fight for him.
Right. And also, don't hop. That's the other thing.
Also, Watford don't have a left back anymore.
Oh, do they not?
They just don't have a left back. Hmm. Holobas, I think they lost him in this League Cup game. He got sent off. So now poor Marcus Silva has no one. So if I'm Brighton, I'm like, Let's go down.
Overload.
But they need someone to go forward, Brighton. They just don't. I mean, they've signed the new boy, haven't they, from Bruges?
Yeah, Izquierdo.
Yeah, the Colombian. So he's a winger. He's got more. It gives them a bit more of an attacking option.
Mm. Well, interesting to see how that one plays out then. We'll be back on Monday, of course, to discuss it all. A quick little pause, and then we're back to do other things. Oh, Aston Villa have been in touch. Leroy Rossini, you may recall, suggesting that John Terry has 3 days a week in Chelsea's ice bath still, and Villa got in touch to say that that is most assuredly not the case, as he has a very, very heavy schedule with Villa and certainly not any different to any other villain. So glad to clear that one up. Adam, as you've got football cliches on, asked Dan Wickens, what are the panel's favourite and least favourite football cliches?
I could go into a lengthy discussion about the concept of, if anything, hitting the ball almost too well.
Yeah.
People say it, but no one actually understands what it means. And but it's, in that sense, it's the classic football cliche because we say it a lot, but no one is ever forced to explain it.
Isn't it about the fact that you introduce an X factor when you don't do something the way that somebody's expecting you to do it, and that's what catches the keeper out?
A shot that's hit almost too well is one that doesn't go in. It isn't a goal. It sort of flies directly over the bar in this sort of beautiful trajectory. So the implication is that the purchase has just been, you know, the connection has just been too nice.
Too sweet.
And yeah, so you should have miss-hit it instead.
All right, Adam, I have to say your book was amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, football cliches. Yeah. Have you got another one out?
No.
Because I saw something that said something like more for, or is there an updated version?
It was the North American edition, so just changed football to soccer all the way through or something like that. I don't know.
Oh, brilliant. Okay. Excellent. Well, it's a very funny book. And you learn things more. Yep. Have you read it?
No, I haven't. No.
All right. Well,
no.
I have, and I don't read books.
I haven't watched any of your games either. So.
No, it's fine.
And as we'll discover later, you never watch Serie A, but, you know, more of that shortly. Who had the hardest shot in the game, asked Nick Kinn?
Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink.
Really?
Mm. Yeah, he had a proper hit on him, yeah.
We had David Priest in last week, and he was saying that Wolves, certainly once the free kicks a certain distance away, are completely unnecessary, and if anything, a hindrance. What do you think about that, and what would your manager think if you did get rid of the Wolves?
No, I disagree. I don't think they are a hindrance. I think for a goalkeeper, they're a little bit more of a safety mechanism in the sense that they cover a certain aspect of the goal.
Right.
So it gives you that little bit more of a leeway to maybe adjust yourself so far so that you go, okay, right, that part of the goal is covered, at least part of it.
Yeah.
And therefore you can take up more of an aggressive stance.
Priest's counter argument, as far as I understand it, is that once the free kick is far enough away, mm-hmm. you can actually have more chance of saving it if you can see the ball all the way in, as opposed to having it emerge from behind your wall at the last minute.
Yeah, but if it's far enough away, it's not going to emerge from behind the goal last minute.
No?
Is it?
I don't know.
No, because it's far enough away.
Way out my depth.
That you take it. Why would you take a wall out if it's far enough away? Yeah. Therefore, there's enough room for the ball to go over, and you just see it pretty much the whole way. If the wall's closer and the free kick's closer, I get that theory in the sense that the ball can go over the wall, around the wall, under whatever, and you've got less time to see it.
Mm.
But the further away is, you actually got more time, haven't you? So it sort of counters what he's saying there.
Yeah, David, Mark's won the Premier League twice. So, which current Premier League defence would you most like to play behind, says Henry Clare?
Tottenham.
Really?
Yeah, Spurs. I think they've got a very... I mean, OK, there's question marks now. Rose, Walker's gone, Trippier.
You have a lot of running to do.
Yeah, you do. I mean, that's the game, though, isn't it? That's the modern game. And that was the biggest challenge for me. The biggest difference from playing at, you know, Middlesbrough, Fulham, going to Chelsea and playing behind a back line that played a really high line. And I mentioned earlier on about controlling that space. I was taught, right, you're not at Fulham anymore, you're not at Middlesbrough anymore, no disrespect to them, is that we've got the ball most of the time.
Yeah.
So we take more of an attacking position. So we need to play higher up the field. You need to be controlling that space between your defenders and the 8-yard box effectively, because generally goalkeepers control the 8-yard box, blah, blah, blah. So that was a different thing for me. And then even the closer the ball came and the defenders were dropping, you still needed to be on your front foot to be able to control that area so that any little balls in behind, they expected the goalkeeper to come out.
We've had some letters on our letter page Oliver McManus talking about the number of bald goalkeepers and the fact that the United States win more when they have a bald goalkeeper. Shame that your career ended just at the point at which you were entering that sweet zone, Mark.
If you'd seen me earlier on in my career, right? If you'd known me since I was like 19 years old, I've had the same hairline.
I'm just being cheeky. Sorry.
No, I agree. No, it's fine.
Nick Hobbs says that interesting West Country derby on Saturday between Forest Green and Yeovil. The home side won another contest during that as Rhys Brown managed to score for Forest Green while Rhys Brown couldn't find the net for Yeovil. You kind of need to see them. They're spelled differently.
Spelled differently, right.
Same name. That was after we talked about Carl Walker and Carl Walter-Peters, Peters and John Collins, Collins-John and that. Bad news from Stephen Endersby, who says, I'm afraid there's nothing former about Boyzone because they're playing Hastings this Friday. Still time to get tickets if you fancy it, I believe. They're at the pier.
All of them together are.
I don't know if it's some like boy band.
Well, it's like Take That, isn't it? I mean, it's not Take That, really, is it?
Is it not?
No.
Take That is still Take That.
There's two of them not in there. I mean, Robin Williams hasn't been there for a long, long time. And then there's still, I think the other guy, I can't remember.
William
the other
Orange,
guy.
Is it?
One of the
Jason
guys.
Jason Orange.
Yeah.
William of Orange.
As left.
Oh, William. All right. Okay.
So.
Dr. Mark Sloan, will an English club go all the way in the Champions League this season? James?
No.
We flew through all of that, which gives me time to say hooray for the Champions League playoff winners, who included alongside Liverpool, Maribor, Olympiacos, Sevilla.
Karabakh.
I'm getting to them. Sevilla, Cesca, who had yet another clean sheet for Akinfeev, Sporting, who had a massive 5-1 win against Steaua Bucharest. In
the club formerly known as Steaua Bucharest.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Yeah. And Apple, I'm not sure which Apple. Which Apple? Is it Apple Nicosia?
I think so.
Yeah, and we'll discover when the groups are announced in the draw this Thursday evening. Everybody trying to avoid Karabakh in that. Celtic also going through. They had a bit of a scare away at Astana. Karabakh, of course, the first Azerbaijani side. So there'll be some travelling there for somebody. And Napoli repeated their 2-0 success from their first leg against Nice. Looking very impressive, weren't they, Napoli?
Yeah, it could be this season's Monaco in the Champions League.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
We've bigged them up before in the Champions League. Last season they looked terrific and then suddenly lost it.
Well, they did play against the champions, Real Madrid. Did go ahead against them at the Bernabeu and at the San Paolo. So, yeah, tough ask.
Yeah, actually, now that I think about it, yeah, that's fair enough. What was Balotelli doing? Do you remember Napoli's first goal? Nice were in 10 megs. Balotelli was off the field discussing with the fourth official.
About his jewellery.
Yeah.
He was, he'd covered up but shouldn't have been wearing. And got quite. Lucien Favre wasn't very happy with him, to say the least. So it was like playing with 10 men, not just that moment, but throughout the entire game. Should have subbed him earlier. It would be good if he could run every now and again.
Oh.
Yeah.
So. What is it with players who want to be different like that? Like, you know, as a rule, like, just take your jewellery off. No, seriously. What is that?
I don't know, Mark. I don't know. Now, also coming up today is a special chat about Italy. Yes, Adam. And it's one that we actually recorded before you even got here, Mark. So after this, not much Mark Schwarzer, but plenty of myself, James and Adam, discussing the upcoming Serie A season on the basis of 90 minutes played so far. But Mark, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a real treat.
Thank you. No, it's a pleasure.
Well, anytime you want to find your way back in from Cobham.
No problems.
You stayed down in the kind of Chelsea kind of bubble.
Yeah, I've lived there ever since I moved down from Middlesbrough in like 2008, played for Fulham and then Chelsea. I'd always stayed in the area. So I live not in Cobham itself, but close.
Brilliant. All right. Well, lovely to see you.
Thank you.
And what's your Twitter?
I'm not on Twitter. No. I'm on Instagram.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Schwarzer.mark.
So Schwarzer23 is not you?
Nope.
I had a sneaky suspicion it wasn't him.
No, I'm not on Instagram. I'm not on Twitter. I'm on Instagram, that's it.
Okay.
So I'm going to take a little picture before we go.
Yeah, for sure. All right, we'll do that. But anyway, for the rest of us, after this, Serie A. Adam, you watch much Serie A these days?
Not a great deal, I have to say. But I am intrigued by Milan's spending spree because.
When was the last time you watched?
Well, I'm guessing around sort of 1998.
Really?
Because for me, Serie A was wonderful in the 90s. That's generally accepted. Unfortunately, for someone who used to play football on a Sunday afternoon, it was very inconveniently scheduled because I used to just fall asleep.
Player in the Italian.
No, absolutely not. No. That one of my childhood dreams, but sadly never materialised. But yeah, I used to just generally fall asleep during the first half of every Serie A game, no matter who was playing.
Right.
And
You couldn't be roused even by Jimbo appearing at half time.
No, I was on by half time. Really
all
sorry.
Oh, right. Well, it's okay. Well, this will all be new to you then,
yes.
Because while you've been away,
Juventus are still champions.
Yeah, Juventus went down, came back up, and are looking this season, James, to lift their seventh straight Scudetto. But as you mentioned, Milan have spent a lot of money and are expected to challenge. You've got some very exciting new faces. Benevento, the first appearance in the top flight for 88 years. Spal, first time since 67. Some big changes to the league. Christmas break is gone. What? There's probably going to be fewer goals because Joe Hart's back in London, but there are going to be more Champions League sides. All right. Here's Andy Follows, who says, is Serie A the most exciting open league in Europe? Milan, Inter, Roma, Juve and Napoli, all title contenders. Well, James Horncastle, we did a mini preview the other day. We've now had a full round of action. What did we learn?
Well, we learned that reports of Juventus's demise are perhaps overstated because they were very impressive against Cagliari, in particular Paolo Dybala, who's now wearing that number 10 shirt. He looks much more suitable in that shirt than, let's say, the likes of Paul Pogba and Carlos Tevez. I think he's a worthy heir to the likes of Platini, Baggio and Del Piero himself. He was magnificent. They won 3-0. It could have been a little bit more complicated. Gigi Buffon had to make a big penalty save when it was just 1-0.
Mm. Juve looking good then, although Cagliari. what about their rivals then? Napoli, who you've tipped previously, didn't spend a lot of money but have got Milic back.
They have, and he scored.
At the weekend?
Exactly. He rewarded the opportunity that he was given by Maurizio Sarri. But I think there's a lot of curiosity outside of Italy about the Milan clubs and whether this is the year that they actually come back, because Milan have spent upwards of 200 million on the squad. They've bought a completely new team. And they started very impressively the weekend. They beat Crotone 3-0, but Crotone were reduced to 10 men early on in that game. But I think the kind of irony about Milan is that they've spent all this money, and the player who's kind of stolen the headlines, stolen the show this summer so far is a 19-year-old who's come through their academy called Patrick Cutrone, who won that penalty, scored a goal and set up another one for Suso.
A lot of excitement about him. They've not just spent a lot of money, but they've actually spent it well for once, which is certainly a novelty from Milan. Kalinic, the latest arrival from Fiorentina. Michael Power saying, should Milan fans be disappointed with his signing after previously the club being linked with Aubameyang, Morata and Belotti?
I don't think so. I think he's a player that they've wanted, they've had on standby pretty much throughout the transfer window, which makes him look like a kind of last resort. But yeah, he suits how Vincenzo Montella's sides play. He's good for 15 goals a season in Italy, which, considering six players got more than 20 last year, again, kind of makes him look a little bit overwhelming. But he makes the players around him better. He's got the technique, I would say, of a number 10, which will probably come as a surprise to a lot of Blackburn fans. But he can play sort of no-look passes over the top for his teammates. And I think he'll knit that team well together really well. And as you said, there does seem to have been a real good plan in recruitment. They wanted to sign players for a specific system, specific style, and they've essentially bought an entire new team to do that. But right. I think it'll be really interesting tonight when they play Skendia in the Europa League.
Obviously, what was the first leg?
6-0. But they're going to experiment with a 3-5-2 tonight. And they're going to play, obviously, Bonucci at the back.
Right.
He's used to that system. And it also allowed them to maybe play Kalinic and Silva up front, although I think Cutrone will keep his place tonight.
Right, if you haven't been keeping up with things at Milan, Adam, that Andre Silva coming in from Porto, midfielders, Frank Kessier from Atalanta looks outstanding, Hakan Çalhanoğlu out of Bayer Leverkusen, they've managed to keep hold of Donnarumma, as you mentioned last time you were on, James. The big news, though, is, I think the one that everyone was talking about was Leo Bonucci. Is he a game-changer? Can we equate his move from Juve to Milan the same way that, say, Andrea Pirlo's journey the opposite direction proved in Juve's title potential thing? Is that a sentence? Answer it anyway.
Well, he brought that up himself and said that this is what he wants to emulate and he wants to swing the power back. And I thought it was quite interesting. I mean, that was seen as a game-changing transfer in the landscape of Italian football, recent history. But I think it also tells you a lot about how Bonucci sees himself. I think he sees himself as a playmaker. I think Juventus will miss Bonucci the playmaker more than Bonucci the defender, even though he's obviously an outstanding defender.
But his distribution, absolutely
exactly.
I mean, unique among, I think, defenders, no?
Exactly, and I think that's one of the reasons why Juventus haven't looked to replace him, because you can't replace him. There aren't any other Bonuccis out there. But, yeah, he clearly has a point to prove. He fell out with Massimiliano Allegri. He loves Juventus, but he fell out with the manager, and I think he wants to stick it to that manager. And I think having a player with that kind of drive, that kind of hunger, is always useful for a team that is going to make, in my opinion, a title push.
Wow, are you hot for some Serie A action yet, Adam?
Well, in terms of Milan, it's a bit similar to Manchester United over here. It's this concept that the Premier League needs a good Manchester United. And from the outside, it seems quite similar for Serie A. After all this time, it needs a strong Milan side, regardless of how much money they've spent and where that money's come from.
Right.
And this may not be a squad comparable to the mid-90s, but perhaps Serie A from the outside needs a big Milan.
Right. Well, in case you were thinking of watching a game this weekend, maybe James can tempt you into Roma-Inter, because that's a clash of two more of the title contenders, as well as being Luciano Spalletti up against his old club.
Exactly. Going back to the Olimpico just 3 months after leaving, and he's set a very high bar for his successor, Eusebio Di Francesco, because Roma had statistically their best ever season last year. Okay, they didn't win anything, but they broke the points record, they scored more goals than they ever had, and they had the capocannoniere, Edin Dzeko, and that was down to Luciano Spalletti in his 18-month spell there. He did a very good job, which was kind of obfuscated by this kind of clash between him and Francesco Totti. Now he's at Inter, and they started the season very well with a very convincing 3-0 win against Fiorentina. Mm. They just so happen to have had quite a low-profile transfer window, a little bit like Roma, but they've signed the players that they needed. They've completed an incomplete team. And, this is going to be a fascinating game on Saturday night.
Right. That win last weekend over Fiorentina, probably the most impressive result of round one of the season. Ian Piov saying, are Inter really going to be as good as they looked in that match, or was it just that Fiorentina were really bad?
Fiorentina fielded the youngest team in Serie A at the weekend. They obviously lost a lot of their best players, two of whom have gone to Inter, Borja Valero and Matias Vecino, but Bernardeschi's gone to Juve, Kalinic has gone to Milan, Gonzalo Rodriguez has gone back to Argentina, so it's going to be a big transition year for the Viola.
Okay, and Inter, they're Inter. We really don't know what to expect from them. What about Roma, where obviously Totti's left, Sala's gone to Liverpool, Rudiger to Chelsea. Chesney's gone to Juventus. They brought in Kolarov. There's some talk that Patrick Schick, one of our favourite players from Sampdoria, might go to the capital. Yeah. But by and large, it's a little bit underwhelming, I think, for Roma supporters after the arrival of Monchi, who was supposed to be the man who was going to transform their transfer fortunes.
Exactly. And I think one of the subplots to this game on Saturday night is that Roma and Inter are the teams in for Schick. Monchi has had a slightly underwhelming window insofar that I think what he's done is he's added the depth that Roma lacked last year, which stopped them going deeper in other competitions like the Europa League and the Coppa Italia, where they were really disappointing. They've been after Riyad Mahrez all summer. It looks like Leicester are going to hold firm and they're not going to sell him to him. So they're having to completely change their plans. It looks like they might go in for Domenico Berardi, who Di Francesco knew. Sassuolo, he can play that role. But Berardi, for whatever reason, just doesn't seem to want to leave Sassuolo. Obviously, he could have gone to Juventus on a number of occasions and chose not to. But Roma had the most difficult game at the weekend. They played against Atalanta, who finished fourth last year. They won 1-0. It was a very gutsy defensive performance. But their only goal came from their only shot on target, and that was from Kolarov, and it was a free kick. And they seem a bit clunky and mechanical in attack. And I think it's, unless they fill that Salah kind of shaped hole in their attack, I think it's going to be more difficult for them to stay in contention than it was, say, last year.
Right. Well, Saturday's Roma-Inter game should be illuminating then as to their chances and Inter's as well. Other matches this weekend include Adam, Genoa's clash with Juventus, Milan up against Cagliari, Fiorentina taking on Samp, and Napoli, Atalanta. Andrew Paler says, what's the best city in Italy for a football weekend, a game or two, a bit of culture, food, and that, apart from Roma and Milan, because I've done that?
I'd either go to Florence or Genoa.
Really?
Yeah, and I'd love to catch a Genoa derby, Derby della Lanterna, because you've got the Luigi Ferraris, which is like an English stadium. You're right on top of the pitch, and the choreographies in that game are magnificent.
Right.
So I would do that.
Florence, lovely town. The Frankie, not necessarily the most atmospheric of...
No, and I think maybe this year, in respect to the fact that they've signed Diego Simeone's son, Giovanni, maybe not the year to catch Fiorentina.
All right, then. And that really does bring us to the end of this totally football show. And many thanks to Mark Schwarzer, who's gone now, so we can say what we want about him. James, thanks to you.
Pleasure.
Bingo. Adam, lovely to see you.
Cheers. Thanks for having me.
When's your new book out?
They need to find a new continent for it to come out in. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Super.
How many countries has it been sold in?
I get statistical analysis about these sort of things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, South Africa's an oddly popular place for it. Huh. Maybe they love their football cliches over there.
Who doesn't? Mm. Who doesn't? Anyway, many thanks to you, listener, for being with us. We're back on Monday to discuss all of that and think of things that we want to talk about in the always exciting international break. Have yourselves a great weekend in the meanwhile, and we'll see you then.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com and tweet us @thetotallyshow.